There is this thing.
Do you realize
consciousness is affected? There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on.
Do you realize our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to another edition of Labor Radio on 90.3 FM in Montreal. This is our December show between 5 and 6 p.m. every third Thursday of the month. Today is December 17th. Thank you for listening. My name is Stefan. I'm your co-host, joined with
me, Mustafa Hennaway. And I guess we're going to be going through our year in review and also a big interview that will be playing after our wrap-up of the year in labor struggles.
That's right. So we had the privilege of talking towards the end of November, actually. It's a bit dated, but still relevant. An interview with Comrade Thapan Sen, the General Secretary of the Center of Indian Trade Unions, about the general strike that was held at the end of November in India. So we'll be playing that in a little bit, but like Mustafa mentioned, we're going to do a bit of a year in review. We wanted to talk about a few of the stories that we thought were notable that happened locally, nationally, and internationally. Yeah.
And obviously for us, I mean, the big story of the year, which really impacted labor struggles, impacted all of us in significant ways, was the COVID-19 pandemic. But I think it had a really significant impact in terms of propelling a lot of labor struggles that we hadn't seen in a long time. You know, demands around health and safety, around outbreaks, around pandemic pay, around conditions. It really helped shape a lot of labor struggles and, you know, showed a kind of clarity between the interests of employers and profit and the interests of workers to stay alive, actually.
No doubt. Definitely in Quebec, we saw like a lot of the public sector units in the healthcare sector just like having their vacations cut, mandatory overtime, mandatory shifts, all kinds of things like that. And they're completely sort of at the end of the rope. This is happening also in the midst of public sector bargaining. So it's all kind of coming to a head as we speak. But even during the first wave, we saw that it really highlighted the sort of lack of quality and of personnel in healthcare particularly. And in long-term care also, in sort of the private sector, which was maybe highlighted more in other provinces, even though it was a problem here as well.
And I mean, one of the things that we saw also was the going back to school, right? And the way that teacher unions had to respond to the back to school plan to ensure the safety of you know, teachers, but also of children. And it was clear that the government, quote unquote, did everything to improve the safety, but we now see that schools have been the largest vector of one of the largest vectors of transmission. And they're not just schools, those are actually workplaces for thousands of people. And we highlighted that with an interview earlier in the November show or with Marianne Mueller. So, I mean, across the public sector was, you know, these people who were on the front lines were then being, you know, were being dragged into these ridiculous overtime situations. There was no extra hiring. There was no extra support, but it was actually just drawing blood from a stone at a certain point in the public sector. And even with the negotiations, it's not that there was some, at the end of the day, affirmation or respect to those workers and heeding to the demands that they have.
No doubt. And I think in the sort of more general way, it sort of shows the difference. I mean, there's been a lot of ink spilled over the differences in approach in socialist countries versus capitalist countries, and sort of the way that the government in capitalist countries is capitalist class government, and so they put the interests of that class before anything else, and the result is almost inevitably, with very few exceptions, capitalist countries have had a terrible, terrible pandemic response compared to most socialist countries. Maybe we should talk a little bit about things outside of the COVID specific, even though in some cases it will touch on that, but outside of the COVID specific conditions in Quebec. On the show, we highlighted a few of these notable conflicts and struggles, namely the Jean Coutu lockout. Do you want to talk about that a bit, Moose?
Yeah, so I mean, in these large warehouses, so Jean Coutu went on lockout, I mean, not just over pandemic pay, but also over the automation and sort of the Amazonification of their warehouse, and trying to bring in more and more subcontracted agency work at the same time. So, I mean, and this is a company that's one of the largest grocers in Canada. So it's not a question of profit. And it's not a question of remaining competitive. So it was clear that they were just trying to squeeze out the power of the union as much as they can, right? So that lockout lasted a significant time. They did resolve it, and not with, you know, overwhelming majority. 76% of the workers voted in favor of the new contract, but it also showed the move in these kind of warehouse and logistics struggles. I mean, inside unions and outside unions, you know, similar to that of what took place in Dollarama, where questions of health and safety, questions of pandemic pay for mainly non-unionized or completely non-unionized and completely temporary workforce was on the front lines to demand better health and safety conditions, but also at the end of the day, basic respect by being permanent hires. And to this day, they've continued their pandemic pay, which has been a success of the struggle and support of, I mean, between the workers and labor activists and trade unions and within the community.
Yeah, and another logistic hub that was hit by a major conflict this year was the Port of Montreal. So I think the first time I was on the show a few months back was when that was happening sort of in the fall. Well, it was a conflict that had been going on for quite a while, but they went on to a general strike. I believe it was in September. But don't quote me on that. It was sometime in the fall. Huge port, huge operation of like kind of, you can't overestimate the value of what that means for the entire economy of commerce in the eastern part of Canada and the northeastern United States. And so that conflict happened sort of on the picket line in some instances, but also through the mass media in terms of the deploying this kind of trope of strikers holding the public hostage and whatnot. And they narrowly avoided back to work legislation by sort of voting on a pause on the strike and heading back to the bargaining table. So they still haven't resolved their contract, which is like a year's past due now. But we definitely saw the power that those workers can hold over bosses and over entire sort of sectors of the economy when you're at that choke point.
The Port of Montreal is actually one of the largest inland ports in the entire continent. So it's one of the central choke points on this continent.
I just wanted to mention too, one last provincial struggle was the RSG Garderie workers. So those are the daycare workers who work out of their own homes, who actually won the right to bargain collectively in an international labor tribunal, if I'm not mistaken, because they were thought of as independent contractors for the longest time. But now they are able to bargain collectively. And their conflict, while it was a very like mitigated sort of the way that people felt after it was resolved, I think was fairly contested. They did vote over 80% in favor of the new collective agreement, but it was a lot less than they were asking for. And I think that this maybe just goes to show a bit more, I think, what's useful for us in terms of trade union and labor interested people is that the government is really trying to starve the public sector into disrepair, you know? So people stop supporting services that don't function properly, that we technically pay for through our taxes, but where the money's not allocated in a way that makes it useful to the service users. And that's what's being done largely to the public daycare sector, not just these RSG workers, but also the CPEs and all the whole sector. Something we need to watch for because it's one of the sort of crown jewels of the public sector in Quebec, and me and Mustafa both benefit greatly from it. So we're definitely going to watch that.
And I guess, I mean, moving on, because we don't have that much time, a critical struggle in terms of the Canadian context and was the gig worker organizing that happened out of Toronto. And for the first time, a historic victory, but also unfortunately a loss, was the organizing of the Foodsters Union. Foodora workers in Toronto, with the support of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, won the right to represent and also fought successfully against the misclassification of Foodora workers as being supposedly, quote unquote, self-contracted. They'd won the vote by landslide majority, and they won the right to bargain. It was one of the first massive group of gig workers to unionize, and was a blow to all of these massive corporations, to Uber, to Uber Eats, to Hungry House, to Skip the Dishes, that they were actually able to unionize. So Foodora, unfortunately, at the end, in classic capitalist style, as opposed to simply just agree to the workers' will, closed up shop. And said, we are bankrupt and we are no longer going to remain in Canada. At the end, what we already know is that they're going to sell part of it under a new name. So there's still negotiations going on and some degree of settlement between the Foodora workers and Foodora, but it was definitely, regardless, it's still a major success and precedent for the gig worker organizing here in Canada, but I think internationally as well.
For sure. just want to like actually name a few more struggles before we move to the international dimension. There was wildcats that happened in the healthcare sector in Alberta just last month. A huge conflict at the co-op refinery in Regina, Saskatchewan, that lasted many, many months. There was a lot of talk about COVID outbreaks in terms of farm workers, particularly in Ontario, as well as slaughterhouse workers in Alberta. During the first wave in Alberta, there was almost no cases and no clusters, except in these big slaughterhouses. Also, the end result of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers arbitration from their 2019, or was it 2018, after they were ordered back to work, that finally came down this year. And obviously all kinds of forced arbitration is always a blow for the right to, you know, work collectively as a union. People should be allowed to strike and use whatever means that they have at their disposal. And so this was another instance of the Canadian government taking away the right to strike and basically the right to collective bargaining. Mustafa, do you want to bring us to the international stage?
Yeah, so moving on quickly to the global stage, and I think we're running out of time, but just to quickly mention that, you know, what we saw in the beginning of 2020 was massive historic strikes against pension reform in France, the proposals of Macron that really brought France to a standstill, trains, planes, name it. This was unprecedented struggle in France. And it sort of kicked off, I guess, the year in terms of labor struggles internationally. I mean, the other major general strike, I guess, which we're talking about for the rest of this, the remainder of the show. But I mean, that was one aspect for me, I think, that stood out. Also,
also notable is the 75th anniversary of the World Federation of Trade Unions, which is like the sort of formerly communist affiliated, but basically a class struggle federation of trade unions globally. There was also a big Juneteenth strike at ports all over the West Coast, from Vancouver down to the southern tip of California, sort of in the context of the movement for Black Lives in the U.S. So that was on Juneteenth. That was pretty impressive. But yeah, I guess maybe we'll close it out on that note. So bring you this interview that we did at the end of November with Comrade Tappan Sen from the Center of Indian Trade Unions. And just to note, like, so this interview happened before the general strike, and then things have just gotten even more intense ever since. So today, the struggle of Indian farmers, I think, has gained a lot of prominence. And that was sort of kicked off by the response of the government to the farmers' participation in the general strike in some ways, because I think it was the farmers that were trying to get into Delhi who were blocked by the police and attacked by the police, which sort of kicked the things up a notch in terms of the farmers and peasants' participation in that mass movement.
Yeah, and I mean, in the interview, what's incredible about it is that he really goes into sort of this the rural question and about the issues that kind of now that we're seeing really play out in terms of the farmer strike and in terms of an opposition to the law and sort of a generalized struggle against one regime. It's definitely been one of my favorite interviews of all year.
Well, on that note, let's listen to it.
And wish everybody a happy and safe holidays. You're listening to Labor Radio. You're on CKT 90.3.
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news, brought to you live.
Welcome to Labor Radio here on CKT 90.3 FM. And we have with us a very special guest for a special interview and to discuss what could be one of the most historic days in terms of the labor movement, not just in India, but around the world, as a general strike is set to take place on November the 26th, 2020, against neoliberalism, against the Modi regime. And with us for this interview is the secretary of the CITU, the Confederation of Indian Trade Union, Kamrata Pansen. Welcome to Labor Radio.
Thank you.
Comrade, can you first start by telling us a little bit about this general strike? So what are some of the key demands and what are you expecting? The strike is taking place in 2 days. So what do you see happening on Thursday?
See, the general strike on 26th November 2020 has been called by the 10 central trade unions. I think we better understand confederation of 10 such confederations of trade unions in our country, along with almost all the federations of the service sector, government sector, both central and provincial government employees, then other independent unions who are not affiliated to any confederation. Almost the entire organized workers and employees organizations countrywide, they have jointly discussed and sponsored this strike call. And this joint platform have been working since long, last 2.5 decades they are working together against this package of neoliberal policy regime, which is only try to decide everything depending on the market forces. And the workers and the people in general are being subjected to huge sufferings. Only the wealth and profit of the big corporates and capitalists are increasing in our country. So against that particular policy regime, we have been struggling since long. Since 1991, there were already 19 general strikes on these issues. We are continuously fighting, along with numerous industry level, establishment level strike actions in between these 19 general strike. And this is going to be the 20th general strike. And the major demand is for the workers is the scrapping of the new labor laws they have already got passed, this BJP government at the center, ignoring, trampling underfoot basic parliamentary norms, and which is aimed at imposing the conditions of slavery on the working people. Then the scrapping of another demand is scrapping of the all the three farm related laws, which country's agriculture is going to be completely restructured in favor of the corporate and big landlord traders. And the peasant will lose its own independence of cultivating the crop as he likes. They are trying to introduce a contract farming, and at the same time, the law regulating the hoarding of essential commodities, food grains and others, that law has been given a go by this new legislation. And naturally, our public distribution system in our country for supplying essential commodities to the poorest of the poor is going to be completely curbed. So this kind of and many other reforms in agriculture they are doing, which will really endanger the country's food security. Till now, India is self-sufficient in food production. It can feed all the 130 crores of its people. But this whole system will be demolished, as accordingly in that direction they have passed some legislations. So against these, and a total privatization drive is going on, and all the public sector companies in our country, government-owned companies, are being sought to be handed over to the private hands on a platter, at throwaway price. And along with that, there will be a huge transfer of people's asset, national asset, in between that those public sector companies to private hands for a song. So all these taken together, the trade unions came to an understanding, a realization that these policies will completely destroy the country's own productive capacity, both in industries and in services, which are built up brick by brick in the process of last 70 years of our independence. So now this is a destructive policy regime, piloting, promoting deindustrialization of the country. And in that background, you see that in our country now, unemployment situation has risen, has become so critical. It is the highest unemployment since last 4.5 decades. During the Modi government's 7 years rule, the country's economy, the employment absorption capacity of the national economy has been reduced to a nothing. That kind of a new colonial type of economy they are trying to develop, promote, this Modi government, in the midst of the continuing crisis of the whole neoliberal capitalist order. That situation is not typical to our country. Globally, that is the scenario. And it has generated such a perversion in the economy that when the GDP is showing a negative result, you know, in the first quarter of our the 2021, the GDP has gone down by 23.9%. It's a negative GDP. Many other rich countries also witnessed that kind of a negative GDP. But how, during the continuing decline, rather in the wealth generation capacity of the country's economy, the wealth of the 1.5% of the country's total population, their wealth has increased by more than 40%. It clearly, that kind of pervert, that situation, reflection, is the pervert distributive model has clearly indicating the ruinous situation in our country, and which is directly affecting the employment, directly affecting the livelihoods of the people. And against that, for reversing this disastrous policy regime, reversing the privatization process, and scrapping all those laws to defend the workers' right, and also to defend the rights of the farmers, this strike has been called the 20th strike, and it was conceived collectively by all the trade union confederations who have sponsored the strike, that we have to go for further militant defiance and resistance in order not only to defend the rights of the workers, rights of the farmers, rights of the common people, we also to defend the economy, national economy as such, to arrest the process of destruction and deindustrialization this Modi government has undertaken in order to serve its imperialist masters. So precisely these are the issues before the country's people. And the most welcome situation is there that when the workers have announced their strike, general strike decision, they conceived it as the beginning of a newer phase of struggle of resistance and defiance, meaning thereby whatever government wants to do will defy that. If you ban my right to strike, I will defy that ban by going on strike. If you don't allow me to, the pandemic, or taking advantage of the COVID-19 pandemic, they have imposed restrictions on people's mobilization. We decided that we'll defy that order to resist, not to allow government to destroy my dear country. So in that struggle, farmers also came round in a very big way. And on the same day, 26th of November, they will also be on the street through militant protest demonstration, along with the workers in the industries and services. That is going to take place on 26th November, followed by 27th. Also, there will be a massive mobilization of farmers defying the restrictive order on mobilization because of lockdown and pandemic. They will be defying that. And in that defiance also, workers will join along with the farmers to that struggle for defiance. So this is the latest position on that issue, on the preparation of the strike. Yeah.
Great. Do you want to speak a bit about the strength of the sort of worker-peasant alliance? Because I think in a lot of advanced capitalist countries like Canada, that's a thing of the past, you know? So we don't necessarily have a concept of how workers and farmers can collaborate in mass militant activity.
It's obvious. Because in your country, or in that matter, most of the advanced industrialized country, the agriculture, what we call agriculture, the farmers, it has become a part of your industry. But in our part of the world, the developing countries, till now, the land, small holding of land, 86% of our farmers are having 3 to 5 hectares of land total. And there are some very, very big landlords. That kind of a production and social relation exists. So farmer develop, constitute by themselves a community. Along with that, the farm laborers, those who are working in the land, in cultivation, they don't have any land. They are also part of that farmers movement. So definitely, they are not under trade unions. They have their own organizations. And that's why the question of workers, peasants, alliance comes out. Concerted unity, the issue come. In your country, all are under union, all are under considered as workers. That's the difference of situation in our country, or in that matter, most of the developing countries, particularly in the South Asia and South Asia.
I have one question.
This
goes to the. I mean, it's clear who benefits from the wholesale privatization, but the way that, in terms of sort of the ideology that Modi has been able to mobilize, to carry out this agenda and sort of trying to divide society, to try to use right-wing nationalism also to is it separate from them carrying out this economic agenda, or is it very much tied to it?
Yeah. You see, that is a problem being faced by our movement because of the extreme unevenness even within the country. India is a very big country, you know, more than 26 provinces are there, around 130 crores of population, different languages, different culture. So there is an extreme point of unevenness, and also a backwardness in consciousness remains in a very many big part of the country. Despite the working class movement is fairly organized in our country, but even then, this backwardness in the society remains. The trade union movement, the working class as such, trying to reorient the consciousness of the people on the class line, exposing the capitalism, and it's working in league with the extreme exploitative feudalism in the rural area, village areas of the country. So we are confronting that, and that's why we are trying to develop a joint front along with the peasantry also on the common issues of our demand. And everybody is under serious depression, the loss of earnings, loss of livelihoods. Particularly the COVID-19 period has exposed the barbarous character of the capitalist regime. Never before so that much exposure was not there. And we believe that Modi's effort to divert people's attention to the non-issues, and also its divisive politics, divide the people on the line of religion and different other disruptive line, that they are trying, with the active support of the media, they are trying to do that. And that's why in that process they have come to power. We are confronting that challenge, and there is no shortcut way unless through the continuous struggle the people's consciousness could be raised. As we understand now, during the entire preparatory period of this strike action, we have decided the strike on October. Prior to that, right from the entire lockdown period, defying lockdown restrictions, we are continuously have different kind of agitation, mobilization in throughout the country. In that process, the reality of strike has developed, and on October, we have decided the strike action. And the response we are receiving, we believe it more than around 25 crore, 20 to 25 crore, how do you put, I don't know, 25 followed by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 25 followed by 70, that much, 250 million around. They are going to respond to this strike call as per our present last moment assessment, so far as the response we have received. And we see this time the farmers will also come on the street in support of the workers' strike. And workers will also join farmers' agitation in their support of their demand. I think all taken together, it can create a situation in the entire society by which the diversionary and at the same time, divisive policies of the Modi government can be defeated in the days to come. The struggle will be on. We are hopeful, we are optimistic on that.
Yeah, just to clarify for our listeners who don't know the Indian numbering system, crore means 10 million. So yeah. 250 million people you're expecting to respond to the call. That's incredible, and that I think goes far beyond the numbers of the 2016 general strike, which was sort of talked about as the largest strike in human history. So maybe just to go back on that, we're talking about the strike that's happening on the 26th, but maybe do you want to speak a bit more about the movement of these general strikes? Because nowhere else in the world are there like such punctual large general strikes that involve so many people. And so maybe talk about what the experience has been like organizing these, and what's been the response after the fact. So we sort of see in the West, mostly we might have like a headline once that says there was a big strike, but what happens afterwards Like, what is the response from government and from the workers themselves?
See, just to correct your information to some extent, in 2020 itself, in the month of January, 8th January, we had one general strike, where, as media estimated, that 250 million people took part in the strike. This time we are expecting more because response is more from them, number one. Number two, farmers are joining in solidarity. So that will add a new dimension to the entire strike action. That is what, till now, the response we are receiving. So far as government's response is concerned, no. Till now, the government is desperately pushing through the same thing. But there are incidences where the workers could make the government retreat. We can tell you one of the biggest state, biggest province in our country, Uttar Pradesh. They are the electricity employees who are generating electricity and also distributing to household. The electricity employees went on strike from 27th of September, 27th of September this month, this year, continuously for 3 hour strike, followed by full strike, indefinite strike from 4th of October. And in that process, on 6th of October, the most barbarous government in the province, Yogi Adityanath's government, they have been compelled to sit with the unions, United Platform of the Unions, and have to sign an agreement agreeing that they are not going ahead with their program of privatization of the electricity distribution system in the state. And whatever they have to do in that direction, they will do only after consulting the unions. So I believe that is a retreat. You saw the coal workers during the same period in the month of July, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, around 6.3 lakh, that is 600,000 in your country. The coal or coal mine workers, they have gone for 3 day strike, again defying the ban on strike. Almost 100% strike, not only the regular workers, including the contract workers who have also joined the strike against the government decision to hand over coal mining to the private hands, including foreign player, and hiking the FDI limit to 100% for direct investment. So coal is a very important energy-related item in our country, and the more than 70% of the electricity generation depends on coal as a feedstock. That is such an important commodity, mineral resource of ours. So workers responded, 3 day strike was there, and the government has to defer twice the day, last day of bidding, inviting the public player, private players. They have to defer it twice, and it has been further deferred for the 3 times because the coal workers have announced their decision. The moment the last day of bidding, they will again go on strike. And they are also gone to the area which are identified for handing over to private coal bearing area. And they are organizing the people over there. And a new kind of resistance is, there is a possibility is developing. So I think there are the petroleum sector workers, one of the biggest profit-making petroleum company in public sector, they have been targeted for to be privatized. They have gone for 2 day strike in the month of October itself. The defense production workers, 85,000 defense item producing that, or 41 ordnance factories, they have declared their resolve, they're preparing for a continuous strike, indefinite strike from 12th of October, 3 days before the commencement of the strike, government has to come forward, talk to the concerned industry unions, and the conciliation is still on, and government has committed till the pendency of the conciliation, they will not go ahead of their privatization right. So there are numerous such examples at industry and establishment level where the workers really took up the call of defiance and resistance and resisting. And I believe this government cannot be issue, cannot be discussed with the governments at the apex level unsettled. The question is that numerous defying resistance has to be built up to compel this government. Whatever they want to do, the workers will not allow them to do. That kind of a narrative we are trying to develop, and farmers joining our struggle, it definitely added to our strength in a very big way.
Absolutely. I definitely want to touch on the fact that it's the CITU's 100th anniversary. Congratulations. Definitely an important achievement to have a militant communist union, with a membership in the millions, 100 years. What did you do to commemorate this, and sort of what did you think it means for the workers' movement going forward?
You see, just a correction in your information. The CITU has not completed its 100th anniversary. The first ever Confederation of Trade Unions, which was established, that is the first ever, 1920, 31st October, All India Trade Union Congress, where the communists are working. That has completed its centenary year, this time 2020, of 31st October. CITU was a part of that movement. They are integral to that movement. And subsequently, because of certain ideological reason, we have to cut out, we have to form CITU. And CITU has completed in the same year, today in 2020, its 50th year after its formation in 1970. But we are a part of that legacy of completion of the centenary of the country's first ever trade union confederation. And we have organized many programs along with the ITUC also jointly to celebrate our centenary formation. No doubt AI2C is also one of the left-wing trade unions in our country, and we are also working together. This strike is also jointly, both we are partnered in this struggle. So it is, we are carrying on, and we, through our work in the trade union, working class movement, is aimed at developing the true sense of class consciousness. It is not this government or that government. It is the capitalist order that need to be uprooted. And we can do it on the occasion of, this is the month of November, the November Revolution we remember. So I believe that we will definitely be able to ultimately defeat the capitalism. Capitalism cannot survive like this. And particularly at this moment, when this old capitalist order are so much deeper crisis, even in your segment of your world also, continuous crisis. So we believe that we have to fight back, withstand the scourge of the crisis, and try to develop the consciousness of the people of real reason of the crisis and bring them out for a decisive battle against the capitalist order. These struggles, strikes, numerous more may come on the way, are a media for our advancing towards that goal of ours.
Mustafa, do you have anything to add?
Hello, beg your pardon?
For me, the only thing, I guess, would like to add is sort of the international dimension, and maybe just for me as a final question, and I know because we're running out of Zoom time also, is that because, you know, that it's not just simply a local capitalist class that is buying for this, you know, wholesale privatization in terms of land reform, who will also significantly benefit from sort of regressive, you know, attack on what has been built is since the time of independence.
See, I can't follow your question exactly. If you can again repeat.
Oh, I mean, who will also benefit internationally in terms of U.S. firms or Korean or Japanese firms or the European Union, who will benefit from Modi's privatization program and land reform?
Yeah. It is basically the Western capitalism, number one, and also Japan. Japan is one of the important player in the triad, and also some other European countries also. Not that much in South Asia to some extent. South Korea farm are also to some extent beneficiary of this privatization process. So there are, but you see, character of the capital is everywhere is the same. Capitalism is an international order, not a typical to a country's order. So you see, I believe it that it is just economic measure is a part of the overall political project of the imperialist forces to establish his hegemony of that on the developing countries. At one point of time, the country got independence in 70 years ago, following the decisive defeat of fascism. Following the decisive defeat of fascism, and that period also witnessed the liberation from foreign rule of a big part of the world as developing countries. I think presently we are in another kind of a situation where imperialism is conceiving that they are strong enough to tackle, and in that way they are trying to again subjugate the developing countries of the world through their machinations. And Modi's effort in this direction is nothing, not an isolated phenomena. Not an isolated phenomena. It is also operating in order to the basic political target of the imperialism in the Asia-Pacific region. Containment of China is one of the reasons. And in these areas, to having its military footprint also one of the important targets. And our country's government, present brand of government, is also practically succumbing to whatever is going on. So this is an all full package approach of the just a neoliberal order. And in that way, working class movement also required to take a comprehensive approach in combating the thing. We are raising our voice, not only the attack on the workers' right, we are raising our voice against the attack on the farmers' right. At the same time, we are raising our voice, the manner this Modi government is trampling the constitutional provisions, the parliamentary procedure of democracy. They are trying to trample everything in their machinations. So it is a political, it is a kind of authoritarianization process is going on of the entire governance, be it economic governance, governance of the political system, and even the governance of the social system is also being targeted towards greater centralization and authoritarianization. And I think this is a whole package that capitalism is applying to sustain itself in its serious crisis. And accordingly, working class has to move with a comprehensive understanding of the whole gamut of the attack. And in fact, the very republican character of our country's governance is under severe attack. All these economic policy measures, social measures, we conceive that the very republican character of the governance is under severe attack. The working class movement has to conceive that aspect also as one of its strategy to combat.
Well, I think we'll have to leave it there, Comrade Tapan Sen. Thank you so much for joining us today on Labor Radio. Your time and expertise is so appreciated, and it's great to have a perspective from someone so knowledgeable and experienced in the Indian trade movement, trade union movement. So any thoughts before we leave you?
Thank you. It's a privilege for me to interact with our comrades in Canada. And we feel that the Indian message of Indian struggle has gone beyond. And that is how we feel the warmth of internationalism. And working class basically is an international class. Proletarian internationalism is our goal. And we are also having close contact with many trade unions in the country. Just an information to you, that on the same day, 26 November, the working class of Greece are also going on countrywide general strike. Just in the month of October, the working class of Indonesia, against the same labor reform, they staged 3-day strike from 6th to 8th October, which was sought to be carved by tremendous violence by the government, but workers withstood that and made the strike successful. So I think we are having very close touch, and we are receiving so many solidarity messages from the unions across the world. Latest yesterday, we received the message of support from the Turkish Trade Union Federation. Similarly, in many other countries, we are receiving across the globe. So it is, we feel quite encouraged about even on receipt of the interest you are taking about the struggle going on in our country. We feel privileged while sharing our experience with you. Thank you.
Well, the privilege is all ours. Thank you, comrade.
Thank you so much, comrade.
Thank you.